And then he continued, probably striking fear into the hearts of Sarah's former employers. This poisoning, if my suspicions are correct, is so insidious and sometimes takes so long to manifest itself that I think it possible it has been going on for some time throughout the country without being discovered. That time was now at an end, although Martland wasn't rushing into anything. "We have nothing more definite than a theory at present," he said. "I will not make the statement that commercial radium poisoning exists until we can prove it." But the implication was, once he could. The press were all over it. Sarah's death even made the front page of the New York Times. Yet while the whole world knew of her passing, there was someone who didn't. Her little sister, Marguerite. She hadn't seen Sarah since 15th of June, the night she'd been taken from their shared room. She'd inquired several times as to how her sister was. Even though Marguerite had seen Sarah decline, she must have had hope. Sarah had always been the strong one once Marguerite had sickened, and she had only been seriously ill for a few days. The nurses put her off when she asked after her big sister. But on 18th of June, when the papers were filled with the news of Sarah's death, Marguerite had innocently asked to see a newspaper. "No," the nurses said, wanting to spare her. "Why?" asked Marguerite. Of course Marguerite Carlo would ask why. And so the nurses told her of her sister's death. She is said to have borne the news bravely, and express regret that she could not be present at the funeral. She was far too ill to go. It was Sarah's father, Stephen, who told the authorities of his daughter's death, who arranged her funeral, who looked after her teenage daughter, Marguerite. It was he who watched her coffin being lowered into the ground at Laurel Grove Cemetery shortly after 2 p.m. on Saturday, 20th of June. Sarah may have been 35, but it was his little girl who'd gone. Chapter 19. Sarah wasn't even in her grave before her former company was denying it was to blame. Veit gave a statement to the press. There was small possibility, he said, of the existence of a radium poison menace. Speaking of the newly appointed Dr. Flynn, the USRC-employed company doctor, he revealed, "We have engaged persons of the greatest reliability and reputation to conduct an investigation." He told the press that Sarah had been examined by the Life Extension Institute while working for the company, and, perpetuating the position taken back in June 1924 when the firm had chosen to ignore the unpublished drinker report, revealed that nothing was found in our plant not found among average industrial employees. It was, he said, absurd to think the same condition could have caused the deaths of Dr. Lehman and Sarah Mylifer. The latter could not have handled in 100 years of her work half the amount of radium Dr. Lehman handled in 1 year. The amounts handled by Sarah were so infinitesimal that in the opinion of company officials the work could not be considered as hazardous. Yet those infinitesimal amounts still left a trace, something that Martland was discovering. Sarah's autopsy was conducted 9 hours after her death. She was the first ever dial painter to be autopsied, the first radium girl to have an expert examine every inch of her body for clues as to what could have caused her mysterious downfall. The medical detective made notes as he moved down her silent corpse, working from head to toe. He stretched her mouth wide, looked inside. It was filled with old, dark, clotted blood. He inspected her left leg, the one she'd been limping on for 3 years. It was, the doctor noted, 4 centimetres shorter than her right.